Hello, it is March 5th and it's just past 5 p.m. You're listening to CKUT broadcast at 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. I'm Jules Bujel and I am your host of the Local Journalism Initiative Roundup, where we share some stories I've been working on at the station with the support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada. It's a pretty warm, pretty nice day in Montreal, but we've got a lot of things happening on the news. So let's dive right in. Just for Laughs, which has been a mainstay in comedy for the past 40 years, announced today that they're filing for bankruptcy protection and canceling this summer's festival. Today on the show, I speak to local comedian and JFL alum Harrison Weinreb on how this is going to impact Montreal's comedy scene. You'll also hear about a protest happening today at 6:30 p.m. outside Montreal's Spanish and Portuguese synagogue, where the Great Israeli Real Estate Event will take place. It's a sales event for properties in illegal West Bank settlements. I speak to Sarah Boivin of Independent Jewish Voices Montreal, who are planning tonight's counter-protest. And again, that's at the Spanish and Portuguese Synagogue starting at 6:30 p.m. But first, the Quebec Court of Appeals struck a blow on Friday to the campaign against Bill 21, and I was able to speak to EMSB Chair Joe Ortona about that news. Take a listen. Quebec's secularism law, Bill 21, has been met with opposition since it was passed back in 2019. The controversial bill bans people wearing religious symbols from entering state employment. This includes teachers, who've become the public face of the bill. Although the province has used the notwithstanding clause to shield it from some critique, the law has still been appealed on a number of grounds, including religious freedom, discrimination against Muslim women, and interference with minority language education in the province. But yesterday, Quebec's Court of Appeal upheld the bill, overturning a Superior Court ruling that had carved out a possible exemption for English school boards in the province. CKUT was joined by English Montreal School Board Chair Joe Ortona to discuss the impact of this ruling on education for Anglo-Montrealers. Here's our conversation. Joe Ortona, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Let's dive right into yesterday's ruling. I want to hear, you know, when that decision was published, what was your first reaction? How did you feel upon hearing the news?
Well, we challenged the bill because we thought it was unconstitutional and that we were confident that we would be successful in court. So you get the news that the judgment is not in your favor, so you're disappointed with that result. So obviously, we were all very disappointed. But, you know, that's not necessarily the end of the road. We have to take the time to read the judgment in full, make sure that we understand it, you know, get the advice from our attorneys about what the next steps could be, see if there's any grounds to appeal, any, you know, errors in the judgment, in the interpretation of the Constitution, or errors of law, or, you know, in the interpretation of the evidence that was presented in Superior Court. And then ultimately decide, you know, if there are grounds for appeal and what the chances of success of an appeal would be. And then we're going to have a decision to make in that regard.
It's been a long process. I know on your end, it's been almost 5 years since the bill was initially introduced. And then, of course, you and other groups launched court challenges. Why was it so important for the EMSB to take that legal step to make this initial challenge?
Well, to answer that question, we have to look beyond Bill 21, really. Since the CAQ has been in power, we've never had a government that has been so hostile toward the English-speaking community, minorities in general, the linguistic minority, school boards. And so we've really faced a constant barrage of legislation that is really targeting us. It started with Bill 40, with the abolition of school boards, and then Bill 21, and after Bill 21 came Bill 96, and then there was Bill 23, which was another education reform that ultimately the government backtracked on. And so, you know, we were put in the situation where we as a school board had to make a decision. You know, are we going to stand up for our constitutional rights and Section 23 and our right to manage and control our school system and everything that that means? Or are we just going to let the government, you know, once again, continue to adopt bills that that erode our rights? And so it was important for us to challenge these bills, obviously on constitutional grounds that pertain to Section 23, which is management and control of our educational institutions. And so the Supreme Court stated quite clearly that we have the right to exclusive control when it comes to hiring teachers. And so we felt it important to assert those rights in court.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the most recent judgment at the appeals court itself, because that court ruled that Bill 21 does not impede Quebecers' access to minority language education. So basically saying it's a matter of hiring, and that's not something that the charter is set up to protect or intervene on. But you're saying that, you know, you're taking your cue from a different court, and you believe that to be untrue. I know it's going to take a long time to read this judgment. It's hundreds of pages. But what was your response to that kind of language, that kind of argument in the appeals court ruling yesterday?
Well, I still haven't had a chance to read the judgment in full. It's 290 pages. So, you know, it's gonna take me some time, perhaps another day or so. But it's evident that this Court of Appeal interpreted Section 23 of the Canadian Charter in a more restrictive fashion. And, you know, from the Supreme Court cases that I've read over the years that touch upon Section 23, it seems to me, and I think it's quite evident, that the Supreme Court has historically given a very broad and liberal interpretation to Section 23, because Section 23 is a really important charter protection. It protects the linguistic minority in each province. And, the purpose of Section 23 is to ensure that the linguistic minority in each province can thrive, you know, to counter the erosion of the community, and that the community be able to continue to thrive, that their rights be protected, and things like that. So, you know, the Court of Appeal gave, a more restrictive and less broad interpretation. So we'll have to see. As I said, we're going to read the judgment in full, see if there are any grounds to appeal there, and then we're going to have to decide what the next steps are going to be.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned that it's the English language minority language community here in Quebec that's going to be impacted, or at least that was your specific grounds at the MSB for making this challenge. But you know, how are you seeing that community, the English Montreal community, respond? How are the, you know, folks in EMSB schools responding to this recent decision?
Well, I think I speak for the overwhelming majority of our community when I say that we were disappointed with the judgment that we got. We've always maintained, aside from the constitutional arguments, you know, that this bill is contrary to our values of tolerance, acceptance, diversity, which we've always welcomed in our schools. You know, students have always embraced diverse teachers, including teachers who have a religious symbol. That's never been an issue. We've never had a complaint from a parent or a student because a teacher wore a religious symbol. Obviously, it doesn't affect the quality of education that the students receive. So this is something that's, you know, it's a disqualifying factor now solely on the basis of something that is completely arbitrary. So, you know, this doesn't reflect, I don't think it reflects Quebec, and it certainly doesn't reflect the English-speaking community across the province. And so people are just disappointed with that judgment. But, you know, that is what it is. And so we're going to have to deal with that.
You know, as a consequence of the bill, we've been hearing that some hijabi teachers in particular and teaching candidates have left the province entirely, decided to teach somewhere else in the country. You know, what's the impact that will have on these teachers and the folks in your schools?
Well, I think we're starting to see, I think we've already seen the impact. The impact is that we have a teacher shortage, and that's certainly not caused by Bill 21, but Bill 21 does amplify this already existing problem and makes it worse, because I think of all of the teachers that we've had to turn away because they wear a religious symbol, and I think of all of the aspiring teachers who didn't even bother to apply for a teaching position because they knew that the law would bar them from teaching. And so many have, obviously left the province, which is sad. And we've tried to recruit teachers as best we can. We've even gone overseas to recruit teachers from France and from other countries. And, it's just contrary to our values that somebody on the basis of making a personal, a deeply personal and moral choice to wear a religious symbol, is barred from teaching when we have a teacher shortage. And then we have a situation where Minister Drainville says, we don't have any teachers, but if any parents want to volunteer and maybe supervise a class, that's better than having no adults in the classroom at all. I mean, we're putting a lot of importance on a religious symbol, and I think the government is totally missing the big picture here. They should be looking at ways to tackle this teacher shortage. They should make the teaching profession, something that more people want to aspire to go into. They should be looking at ways to retain teachers, because something like 33% of the current teachers leave within the first 5 years. So all of these things are the things that the government should be tackling, instead of, these things that really don't have any effect on education, that don't have any effect on the children at all. But all it does is it scores them points with their base.
I just want to confirm, you said that you already had to turn teachers away. Am I right in thinking, though, that teachers who are already within the system, as long as they stay teachers, like within the EMSB, they're not affected by Bill 21? It's only new teachers who are entering?
Right. It's new teachers from the time that the law came into effect. So teachers who were already wearing a religious symbol could continue to teach, but this law was adopted in 2019. So for the last 5 years, any new teacher who applied to come into our school, and that includes teachers who were teaching somewhere else but are now applying for a different position, because they lose their grandfather status. So anybody who basically changes from one school board to another, or looks to get promoted to a higher position, or new coming teachers, would have to agree not to wear a religious symbol in order to be hired.
This is newly as a result of the law, or is it something that's been existing for a while? Because my understanding was that the EMSB had this, carve out for English minority language rights reasons, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's confusing for some. So to be clear, we've not been allowed to hire teachers who wear a religious symbol since the law was passed in 2019. And even though we got the judgment in Superior Court that said that part of the law was inapplicable to English school boards, because the government decided to appeal that decision, it suspended the decision. So the law continued to be in effect. So we haven't been able to hire teachers who wear religious symbols in the last 5 years. Unfortunately, that continues to be the case. Had the Court of Appeal granted what we were seeking and maintained the Superior Court judgment, that would have had an immediate effect, and we would have been able to hire teachers right away, whether or not the government chose to appeal to the Supreme Court. But obviously, that's not what happened, and so we're bound by that, and we're stuck having to continue to apply this law, which I wholeheartedly disagree with. but I don't have any other choice other than, you know, judicial recourses. So, as I said, we're going to have to look at those options and see where we're going to go from here.
Yeah, so there were, you know, possibly teachers who were waiting on this decision to say, well, you know, if this comes through and the EMSB, you know, wins in court, I could have a job. And now basically it's a hard no for them for at least the next several years.
Well, if it does go to the Supreme Court and if there is an appeal, I can't imagine that the Supreme Court would refuse to hear it. I mean, this is obviously something that's that it's a question of national interest for sure. You know, especially with the use of the notwithstanding clause and how restrictive it is and just how broadly governments can just invoke it. I mean, just that in and of itself is a question of national interest that I think the court will want to hear. But obviously, you know, if it does go to the Supreme Court, it's going to be at least a couple of years before a decision comes down in that regard. And but this is our system. We live in a democracy that's founded on laws, and there's a recourse to fight the laws, and that's one, to vote in elections and get people there who are willing to change the law, or to fight the law in court on you know, on constitutional grounds. And so we've tried speaking to the politicians. We didn't get very far with them, and so the only recourse we had left was the courts.
Speaking of those politicians, obviously François Legault was quite happy with the result of the ruling yesterday, but Justin Trudeau has signaled his government's willingness to support a challenge at the Supreme Court of Canada. I know the EMSB is still considering whether it wants to take that step, but, you know, how does it feel to hear that at the federal level there is such strong support for the case that you've been making?
Well, I think the federal government should intervene. It's a question of national interest. I mean, they have absolutely no reason not to intervene. So, if and when it does get to the Supreme Court, I hope that they'll be there, and I hope that that they'll be heard and making strong arguments against the bill. You know, with regards to the Premier Legault. Look, I find it harder and harder to take him seriously, quite frankly. I know he's the premier, but, you know, here he is. He's very happy with the judgment. He's very happy with the judges now that rendered a judgment in his favor. 3 days ago, he was criticizing the judges because he lost a different case and saying, oh, I'm not sure if the judges on the Court of Appeal are really, you know, impartial because they are named by the federal government. I mean, you know, just attacking the judiciary like that, I think he loses all credibility when he says things like that. I mean, our judicial system is the envy of the world, including parts of the free world, for a court system that is... that is fair, balanced, impartial. Judges are named based on their competencies and their knowledge of the law, and not based on a certain politician or a certain party's ideological agenda. Like I can cite as an example the United States. So you know, those are pretty like Trumpian statements to be making. And you know, I have faith in the judicial system, and you know, at the end of the day, there will be a final decision on this, and whatever that's going to be is going to be what's going to bind the English Montreal School Board, the government of Quebec, and, you know, all of Canada.
All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see how it all shakes out for sure. But Joe Ortona, thank you so much for coming on CKUT. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thank you.
Once a year, Montreal stays up late for Nuit Blanche. It's an all-night party with live events, art, and some of the biggest crowds that bars and venues will see throughout the cold winter months. For one Montreal bar, though, this Saturday came as a letdown, and the owner says that Epic, a ski and snowboard competition that held its second edition this past weekend, is to blame. Here's Sergio Da Silva of Turbo House, a bar and live music venue on Rue Saint-Denis, speaking with CQT on Friday.
So basically what's going on is during Nuit Blanche, which is our busiest time of the year by far, they've restricted access to our side of the street. during the snowboard event for what I understand insurance purposes, so people aren't around. And then once they are done with the event, they've opened a bar that is directly in front of my bar. So after people are done watching the event, they can go drink White Claws at the, you know, the city-endorsed outdoor bar that they didn't give us the opportunity to do ourselves.
It's this lack of consultation that rubs De Silva the wrong way. He says a quick conversation beforehand could have prevented the issue.
Doing these events are a good thing, but a bit of foresight and planning as to where to put an outdoor beer tent, you know, it would have been nice for them to speak to me directly or to just, you know, put the bar in front of the, you know, all the other vacant spaces that are along the strip.
But for De Silva, it hasn't been easy getting answers from the folks at APIC, organizer Tribu, or the Commercial Development Society, the SDC Quartier Latin.
Right now, nobody wants to tell me who is responsible for the actual placement and how this is done. Whoever was responsible, like, it would have been nice for them to speak to me about it, and we could have come to some resolution. It kind of goes to show that, like, the city will talk about the things that they want to do for nightlife in Montreal, but ultimately when it comes down to execution, it's just poorly managed and badly done.
APIC and Tribu both refused to comment when reached by CKUT. But SDC Quartier Latin Managing Director Rachel Van Velzen responded. She said that the sidewalk was only closed for a brief period on Friday, though the crowds on Saturday night put the street at full capacity for a few hours, with a queue to enter or exit the strip. She also said that when the competition ended at 10:30, the sale of alcohol ended too, with the barriers opening to everybody, and that over the course of the weekend, there were tens of thousands of visitors benefiting many of the businesses along the strip. Still, De Silva says that TurboHost made $3,500 less than last year, at a time when the bar could have really used the boost. But he's grateful for the folks who did make it out on Saturday night.
So I have no faith in what the city can do. Always, like, my first thought and my first sort of hope is the community that we're in, and my neighbors and the people who come to shows, and finding ways to, you know, make things work on our own. Because if you wait for the city to do anything for you, you're going to be waiting forever. Ultimately, you're going to be disappointed and broke.
I'm Jules Bijal. Thanks for listening.
When you hear the words mental illness, what do you think?
I have friends who don't even know that I suffer from depression.
Why don't they know?
Because I'm scared they'll ostracize me if they know, and then they'll abandon me. I don't want to be alone.
You're discriminated against when you have a mental illness. With other illnesses, there's compassion.
It doesn't take much to be diagnosed mentally ill.
Due to an outburst, I was diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic, and now the doctors say it's something else.
20% of people and counting have had or will have a depression.
People throw different labels around. You are this or you are that.
Everybody psychoanalyzes someone during a conversation.
You have a right to express emotions.
Anger, love, hate, sadness, confusion. It does not mean you're ill.
If you're down and out, seek help. Don't be scared. It can be very intimidating.
There are people listening and willing to help.
We have to innovate.
Get informed. Contact your local CLSC, Sun Youth, AMI Quebec, Forward House, or Prevention Suicide.
The CKUT Programming Committee is responsible for CKUT programming. If you have any specific complaint regarding anything you have heard on air at 90.3 FM in Montreal, please outline the nature of the complaint along with the precise program date and time. Letters must be signed with full name and current address of the individual or individuals lodging the complaint. Postal or personal deliveries only. CKUT's address is 3647 University Street in Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. The committee is committed to ensure listener complaints are given serious consideration. Listener feedback can be left at the following number: 514-448-4041, extension 2547.
Thanks to everyone who donated to CKUT's annual funding drive. Your generosity truly helps keep our engines burning. It's never too late to donate. You can do so by calling 514-907-9424 or going to ckut.ca and hit the green Make a Pledge button at the top. All paid entries will be entered into a grand prize draw. You can pay your pledge and pick up your gift weekdays between 11 to 6 p.m. or by appointments. Call 514-907-9424. Thank you.
Not what I got.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
All right, you are listening to CKUT broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. I'm Jules Bigel, and I am joined via phone by Harrison Weinreb. Harrison, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you, yeah. Good to be on the phone with you.
Yeah, always. On this very sad day, because obviously we're here to talk about Just for Laughs, who filed for bankruptcy protection today. They laid off, I believe, around 75 people. And I guess, you know, you're a local comic. Maybe you can tell the listeners about what interactions you've had with JFL over the years.
For sure, definitely. I've done Just for Laughs a few times. I was on, like, their New Faces show a few years back, and I thought it was a great experience. So it's kind of it is definitely a bit of a sad day, and it's sad for the Montreal comedy community because apart from Just for Laughs, there isn't a whole lot of English comedy going on in the city.
Yeah, I want you to elaborate a little bit on that, because I think, you know, when people think about Just for Laughs, they think about the big corporate festival where people are brought in from around Canada, the US, the UK, you know, but it seems like there's a real connection to local folks who are doing indie comedy in Montreal that I think not a lot of people might recognize at first glance. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think like the Montreal comedy community's relationship with Just for Laughs is like, it gives people that do comedy in the city an opportunity to kind of like see their favorite comedians. Like I started going there with my sister when I was pretty young, and she had a job at the ticket office. So she would kind of get us free tickets to stuff. And that's where I kind of started to really like comedy. And I guess that might be where I decided I wanted to do it. So it is kind of sad that, like, we won't, this year at least, we won't have the opportunity to kind of go see the best comedians that are out there, and be inspired by them and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and do you feel like it, you know, there's the big festival, there's also Zoo Fest, which is kind of maybe more, I guess, I don't know if it's up-and-coming names in comedy, would you say? Like people who, if you're sort of in the scene, you might know about, or like if you listen to comedy podcasts or things like that, but aren't necessarily getting booked yet for like a Netflix special?
Right, yeah, definitely. ZooFest kind of gave an opportunity to like local comedy, local comedians and like comedy producers to like put on their shows as part of the festival. I don't know how it is related to Just for Laughs. I'm not exactly sure what the situation is there, but I had some shows on Zoo Fest a few times that I was able to put on my friends who do comedy and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's definitely not ideal that we won't get that opportunity again this year.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, so I actually, I have a disclaimer, which is I went to see Robbie Hoffman, who is this like former Montreal comedian, now living in the U.S.
For sure.
And I saw you open for Robbie actually this past summer at Zoo Fest, and like a perfect opportunity to platform somebody who's like, you know, has a little bit of a bigger American audience now, but also like has roots in Montreal with a Montreal opener. You know, it's like, it seems like it's those kinds of opportunities that are going to get lost. Are you hearing from like other comedians, like friends of yours? How are people taking the news?
I'm not really sure. I was surprised at how few messages I actually received about this, but I'm sure maybe people are still in like the processing stage of like what this means for comedy in the city. And yeah, no, definitely like the opportunities that comedians like Robbie Hoffman presented. Like Robbie's one of my favorites. Like she would, you know, kind of like show me, you know, show me around, and like we would go to the hotel, like the parties there at the hotel, and was she was a good kind of like, I would say she would help me network and that sort of thing. So, no, definitely, it's going to be missed this year.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like that people haven't been reaching out. You know, you're like, okay, come on, people
right,
in my life,
right.
You better show up for me. This is a big deal. But it, maybe it's just one of those things where it's like, people don't really know quite how to respond as well, because from what they're saying, so they filed for like bankruptcy protection, but they want to have some kind of, I don't know, buyer so that the festival can exist again in the future. It's unclear.
For sure. Yeah, no, I don't fully understand what the situation is myself. And I do definitely predict that like as the news settles in, like there will be more conversations about that.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that like it was just a showcase for the English Montreal comedy scene as much as anything else. Obviously the festival is bilingual, but there's always been a large English language contingent, right, in terms of who they book. How do you see that, I guess, like being impacted now that JFL is, I mean, at least for the near future, no more? Like, what are some of the, I guess, venues or showcases or things that might kind of be affected, but also might be places where people can like go out and show their support now that there isn't the easy, you know, like JFL Zoo Fest kind of like, I guess, spotlight on these kinds of folks?
Right. Yeah, for sure. Like, I know Théâtre Sainte-Catherine had, like, a lot of shows happening during the festival. They host Midnight Surprise, and they host... That's where Robbie performed. And I know that venue has, like, great shows kind of going on every week. I'm not sure how, like, the lack of Just for Laughs is going to affect that venue, but I know that they are going strong with like putting on their own shows and renting out the venue to like local and non-local performers that are passing through.
Yeah, so
and
that's definitely one place to support, it sounds like, if folks are looking for comedy. Yeah, I guess like in terms of, you know, showcases, events, things like that. Yeah, I feel like I cut you off a little bit. What do you feel like might, I don't know, happen for folks? Is there like room for people to kind of do more stuff in the space? Or do you think that like combined with the general kind of like climate towards Anglophones happening in Quebec right now, like this could be just like part of a bigger blow to the Anglo-Montreal comedy scene, I guess?
Definitely. I think it is like a pretty big blow to the Anglo comedy scene here. And, yeah, I would say like just the kind of marketing power of Just for Laughs did a lot to, you know, get the Anglo community here out to shows. And I don't know like how effective. Obviously, like just the power they had behind their their marketing and their ability to do that is like much stronger than the power that more local venues and shows have, you know. So it'll be, you know, interesting to see if people seek out like more independent shows, or if that kind of the lack of the of Just for Laughs will just make them unmotivated to see comedy, English comedy in the city.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully not, right? For comedians like you and other folks just like who are interested in comedy, because there are, I don't know if it's because of Just for Laughs or incidental to it, but there is great talent in the city. So I guess looking forward from this announcement, I don't know, what do you want people to do apart from like following you across all social media platforms? Like, what do you think that people who are interested in supporting Anglo comedy in Montreal should do?
Honestly, just follow me across all social media platforms. That'll be good enough.
Yeah.
But I think people should, you know, check out like Théâtre de Catherine, go to like the Comedy Nest. The Comedy Nest has like amazing headliners that like come through every weekend, a lot of them. Like, that would probably be the next best thing to seeing like touring comedians. I mean, I'm sure comedians are still going to like pass through here and like do Club Soda and stuff, but like the Comedy Nest has a different headliner every week from the States or Canada or sometimes even elsewhere, and it's a great opportunity to like see like professional stand-ups in the city. So I hope people check out shows like that more. There's also the Third Floor Comedy Club, which recently opened up, which has very fun, like, local showcase shows. And, yeah, I just hope people will sort of fill the void of Just for Laughs being gone with stuff like that.
Sweet, yeah. And, I mean, there's also, like, it opens up an opportunity. Just for Laughs has been around for, I believe, 40 years. And, you know, they're a huge player in Canada's comedy scene, like, in the world comedy scene even. But now that they're gone, it does open up opportunities for new folks to come to the space, new promoters and bookers. And yeah, so we'll, I guess, have to see what comes about. But on that note, Harrison, where can people who want to stay in touch with your comedy, where can they find you? Where can they follow you?
Okay, nice.
You know, you came on the show to talk about JFL, so I'm, you know, gotta, if people want your expertise on these issues, they need to know where to find you.
Right, yeah. They're going to have to follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at, that's a thing, because my handle is Harry Weinrib, but it's an I instead of a Y. So that's kind of probably cost me a bunch of followers over the years, like 10 probably. And then on Instagram, it's harry.jw. Again, it's not a Y, it's an I. This has been, like, basically the reason I'm not super successful. But, yeah.
Okay, well, you know.
You can just Google my name, and if anyone wants to do that.
Well, maybe soon the the handles for Just for Laughs will become available. So,
oh yeah, that's a possibility too. I might try to snag those.
Yeah, that could be the next endeavor.
Yeah.
Any final words? I mean, like, you've talked about the Théâtre Sainte-Catherine and lots of other kind of venues and showcases that, you know, folks can check out if they're missing that Anglo comedy hit. But yeah, I don't know. Anything you want to end with looking ahead?
I mean, not really. It would just be cool to see people kind of come out to see shows. And maybe, because the thing is, I feel like people want to go see comedy when it's like their favorite comedian. Like, I personally would probably not go to, like, if I didn't do comedy. I don't know how many just like random comedy shows I would go to. So the thing about Just for Last is like they bring people in who you already know and you want to see. But I would encourage people to like take the chance on going to see a show where they're not sure exactly what the lineup is, and maybe they would, you know, discover, find somebody that they like.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, that's how you find out who you like, right? It's just by like going to shows, finding one person, following them. They'll play, they'll like be on a lineup with somebody else, and it sort of snowballs from there. Yeah. So, well, we'll
for
see.
Sure.
We'll see how folks respond and, you know, what unfolds in the coming days. But Harrison Weinreb, thank you so much for coming on CKUT.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. And that was Harrison Weinreb on the line at CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. We're going to have a short break, and then we'll be back with more local news. You are listening to CKUT, and we're back with the Local Journalism Initiative Roundup. I'm your host, Jules Bijal, and today I'm going to be talking to Sarah Boivin of Independent Jewish Voices Montreal. They are planning a counter-protest at 6:30 outside Montreal's Spanish and Portuguese synagogue, where the, quote, Great Israeli Real Estate event is taking place. Sarah joins me on the line now. How are you doing, Sarah?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. Can you first just introduce Independent Jewish Voices Montreal, which is the group that you're with and the group that is organizing, or co-organizing, I should say, tonight's counter-protest?
Absolutely. And I do just want to specify that it's not a counter-protest. It is a protest against the event that's being held at the synagogue today. There is a counter-protest of folks who are defending the real estate event happening right now, but ours is the protest against the event. So Independent Jewish Voices is a national level Jewish organization that advocates for justice for Palestinians and works in solidarity with Palestinians. We have been active across the country for over 15 years and have over 1,500 Jewish members across the country in multiple chapters.
Yeah, so thank you for clarifying, first of all, because, you know, it's these distinctions are important, protest, counter-protest, if there is actually, like, a counter-protest against your protest. But before we get to that, maybe you can just tell me a bit about the event that you're protesting against tonight. What exactly is the Great Israeli Real Estate Event, and why is it so problematic right now?
For sure. So this is the Montreal stop on a real estate sort of fair tour that is being organized by a series of Israeli and American companies associated with Keller Williams Real Estate Group. The stops are advertising properties for sale in Israel on stolen Palestinian land, including in internationally recognized illegal Israeli settlements. We locally launched a call and email campaign to try to ask the synagogue events manager to cancel the event, but they refused. So we asked Jews of Conscience in Montreal and our allies to gather at 6:30 tonight at synagogue. So we're about to meet there to speak out and say that it is unacceptable for our cultural and religious spaces to be used to sell stolen land.
Yeah, I'm going to read some tweets from Liberal MP Anthony Housefather, who has spoken up in response to the protest. And I think I'm just going to read them because I think they're pretty representative of a certain kind of position that would be in favor of the event today. So he wrote on Twitter, "The Spanish and Portuguese synagogue in my riding is over 250 years old. Over 10 generations of Jewish Canadians have felt safe in that building. Tomorrow night, anti-Israel protesters have announced a protest outside the building, completely inappropriate and unacceptable. I've been in touch with political leaders at the municipal and provincial levels and Jewish community and synagogue leadership. The police are aware and we are assured that security will be top of mind. It should not be necessary to walk past protesters to enter a house of worship." So, what's your response to that kind of statement, and especially the last part about, you know, walking past protesters to enter the synagogue?
Yeah, well, it's very convenient for Anthony Housefather that he doesn't consider the Jewish organizers of today's event part of the Jewish community. We hear that loud and clear, and that he has no interest in representing us, nor all of the many, many people in his riding who are speaking up and demanding that he advocate for Palestinian rights, including a local coalition group called Côte des Neiges for Palestine, who will be speaking at our event today. I think it is completely unacceptable that this event is being held in a place of worship. It is an insult to the synagogue. It is an insult to our tradition. And it is an insult that those people are walking into the synagogue in the interest of learning about how to buy internationally recognized as illegal settlement land. So we really, none of us wanted to be here tonight. We all wanted the synagogue to cancel the event, and we're very disappointed that they decided to go ahead with it. It's not a synagogue event. This is not a prayer. This is not a service. And we wish that it had just been canceled.
Yeah, he also mentioned that MP Anthony Housefather mentioned as well that he's been in touch with the police about this event. Obviously, this is part of a trend we've seen, including a protest last night against a Concordia event where members of the Israeli armed forces were speaking. A lot of protests against these types of events or in solidarity with Palestinian human rights have had a large police presence. What can you tell me about, what you're sort of expecting on that front for tonight, how these kinds of I guess, situations usually go when you guys are staging these kinds of protests, which I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, your group deals with pretty peaceful protests typically.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it speaks really to the criminalization and demonization of Palestinians that we've seen really intensifying alongside anti-Arab racism and Islamophobia over the last several months. I think it's horrible how the cops are being used as a way really to keep our communities afraid and to communicate that Jewish Montrealers have something to fear, which is really not the case. We continually are seeing that the aggression in these kinds of protests is coming from the Zionist counter-protesters, and it's unacceptable. And the police are notoriously ill-equipped to keep people safe in these situations. So it's really disappointing when we see our political representatives and our community leaders calling on police as if this is an answer to keep us safe, instead of actually working on building bridges between communities and representing the voices of those who put them in those positions.
Yeah, I mean, so you mentioned that you're seeing violence a lot from counter-protesters from the other side, but I think, you know, this is not what somebody who is casually following these protests in the media or this issue would necessarily think, right, is the case, because, you know, what you hear more often is about the sort of dangers of pro-Palestine protests. We saw this with, you know, a protester scaled a Jewish hospital in Montreal, scaled the scaffolding outside it, and there was widespread condemnation. Meanwhile,
Mary, just to jump in, that was in Toronto.
Yes, in Toronto, exactly. Meanwhile, also in Toronto, just I think earlier this week, there was a counter protester shooting a nail gun at Palestinian protesters, and sort of that has not received the same kind of condemnation from politicians. This is the kind of thing, you know, that people are talking about, activists are talking about in Toronto. I'm curious about what you're seeing in Montreal. If you can talk about specific cases where you see, I guess, violence from counter-protesters, or where
sure,
you see this
sure.
kind of, you know, politician or media emphasis on one side over the other.
Absolutely. So last night I was standing in solidarity with Jewish and Palestinian student organizers who were organizing against that Startup Nation event that was hosting Israeli soldiers in a promotional tour. And really what I saw was that aggression from folks who were trying to push through the crowd against the door. I saw one video circulating today where one woman who very aggressively tried to push through people multiple times was then filming herself farther away from the crowd and claiming that, you know, she approached the crowd and got beaten. That was a complete lie. Of course, had anything like that happened, the cops would have jumped in immediately, and it was just completely fabricated. And we're seeing tweets today from Federation CJA and from CJA and really so many others in the community calling, you know, calling all the protest all kinds of violent names. And of course, no mention of nail guns in Toronto or of people, counter-protesters last night, really having to be held back by police onto the sidewalk across the street and being very threatening and intimidating to protesters.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, obviously, Liberal MP Anthony Housefather, Montreal-based MP, has been very vocal in support of the Israeli state, but even other Montreal MPs like Mark Miller have made statements against pro-Palestinian protests that happen in the city. I'm thinking of, there was a protest on McGill campus outside the Bronfman building. It was about a course where management students go to Israel, but he basically said, you know, it's not okay to do this kind of protest because of who the building is named after. It's anti-Semitic. You know, these claims of anti-Semitism are very common, and I'd like to hear from you as a Jewish organization in this space around, you know, just how the difference between what is anti-Semitic protesting and anti-Zionist protesting, like how you guys draw that line and how you respond to kind of some of the rhetoric from politicians like these.
Yeah, it's absolutely disgusting how the very real threat of anti-Semitism gets wielded as a bludgeon to intimidate, to scare, and to harass people, to push them out of their jobs, to push them out of all kinds of positions. So it's really disgusting. And we do a lot of work as an organization to combat anti-Semitism, real anti-Semitism, from a critical lens that empowers people to be able to distinguish between criticism of the state of Israel, which is very valid and warranted, and anti-Semitic comments, which can come from a whole range of places and be on a whole range of topics. But really, in this moment, we're here to empower people to tell the difference between the two and to be able to stand firm in their criticisms of Israeli violence.
Yeah, just to wrap up, I mean, you know, obviously, we're many months into the war in Gaza right now. 30,000 Gazans have been killed by Israeli forces at last count since the initial Hamas attacks of October 7th, which killed over 1,000 people with 250 hostages. But, you know, these 4 months have seen a lot of deaths in Gaza. Canada has pulled out of a UN aid program to Palestine. Now we're seeing Israeli mass shootings around, you know, Palestinian food and aid lines. You know, things are really, really dire. And events like these, you know, it's debatable if that should be where our politicians' focus is. Where would you like to see liberal MPs and just people in positions of power put their attention? What should the Canadian government be focused on right now?
That's a great question. And I like to believe that we put our representatives in such positions of power so because they have such incredible attention spans and can split their capacity between both attending to local issues and supporting their constituents who are speaking out against genocide and being extremely brave in this moment in doing so, while also pushing pressure at the national level for an arms embargo, for immediately restoring aid to the UNWRA, and for calling for an immediate and permanent ceasefire. So really, we expect our politicians to be able to be as brave as we are in this moment to do what's right. And if they're not able to carry that out, then we will replace them at the next election.
All right. Powerful words from Sarah Beauvin of Independent Jewish Voices Montreal. Sarah, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Take care. To join the protest happening tonight, you can go to Montreal's Spanish and Portuguese Synagogue. It'll start at 6:30 p.m., and groups like IJV Montreal, the Palestinian Youth Movement, and others are going to be out in force against the Great Israeli Real Estate Event, which, as Sarah taught us, is going to include real estate presentations about properties on illegal West Bank settlements. And that wraps up our show for today. You've been listening to the Local Journalism Initiative here on CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. As always, we'll post our stories from the show to our website, ckut.ca/LJI. And yeah, that's where you can find our archive and more information as well about our growing news collective. That's a group of volunteers who are producing community radio here at CKUT. Thanks so much for listening.
you're listening to CKUT 90.3 in Montreal. Awesome. Very cool.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
Proud to rebroadcast the following program entirely in the Mohawk language. The Mohawk, or Ganyatgahaga, are the original people of the unceded traditional territory known as Montreal, or Jojaake. The Ganyatgahaga, or people of the Flint, have two communities close by, and they are working hard at revitalizing their language. This program is part of those efforts, and it originally aired in Ganasadage on RKR, reviving Ganasadage Radio. And now, listen to Jojaake's indigenous language on CKUT.
Danana akte no zawa da husa da da ga akweza srona do gani ga te ke hrono to ga ni ni oni ne wa ta to ga ni osweka to gani akte na ni zawa da husa da ga ha gwe gwat kono hara da ne ga are zaya ga ne wa I ne ta haswate te ni waksno ta
ta no ga I ges wa ni di yo
ne ga dine ne oja ga ne ne a to ga ga na wa ga oska te wa ni awre da no asa fm zawa da husa da danana kana sadaga oska da wanyawar tana oska yo distokwe zada fm kwa gwa gwa tkwana harado